everybody. My name is Roland. I'm your host. Today we're having a special lecture on the topic of forbidden food. You know, as I look around at people, I see that I can actually see that people are being degraded by food. You know, when you look at people and you see, you know, you can see the morning after the night before, you can see people if they were out late yesterday doing something, and you see they're all puffy in their face, for example. Or they may not have been out late. Maybe they were barbecuing out in the backyard, or they had a big meal, or they were watching football and ate a bunch of stuff. Or you know how that is. And you can just see the next day that there's something unhealthy, something puffy, something pale about their expression on their face. They don't look good. And after several years of, you know, overdoing things, eating a little too much here and a little bit of the wrong food there and so on and so forth, well, people begin to, their whole physicality becomes altered. They're just not the same anymore. And I would like to suggest that, and so I can also see, and you better, I hope you're sitting down, because this is, you know, this is going to sound like a shocking thing. But when you, after we explore a bit more deeply into the subject, you'll see that it's not shocking at all. It's just the plain and simple fact, and that is that food is killing us. You see, the human race is a fallen race. You know, they talk about evolution and so forth. Well, it's just not true. We're not right. We're not risen apes. We're not rising. We didn't rise from the slime. Instead, we're descending. We're falling away from what we once had, from a higher state of being. We're actually falling away from living, from eternal life, from living perpetually, even as God lives eternally. We're falling away from that, and you can see it in our character. You can see it in our the way we think and the way we feel and the way we look. We're falling away. We're descending. You can sense that in your own life. You sense somehow that when you were younger, you were more innocent. Life was brighter and you were sweeter, and life was more innocent. And somehow we're falling away from it. We're being degraded, and we're losing what we once had. You know, so we yearn for paradise lost. We yearn for something beautiful and something sweet, but we don't know how to refine it. But maybe I can help you. But in order for you to refind what you lost, you have to discover the secret way back. The secret way back to contact that from which you fell. And so let's talk today about how we fell. Because perhaps by seeing how you fell, you will also then be able to see which way to go to find your way back. All right, so let's talk about how we fell. Let's talk about why food is involved in our deterioration. See, we all have to eat. We have to eat to live. In our current state of being, we have to eat to live. Food sustains us. But at the same time, it degrades us. So in other words, we eat to live, but it's a life that leads to death. See, what you inherit, what we all inherit, unless we find the secret to salvation, unless we find the escape clause, if you will, unless we find the way back to the source, you know, just like a salmon has to swim upstream, well, we have to find the source from which we fell. And so, but until we do, we have to eat to live. But even as we eat to live, we're only sustaining the life that leads to death. You see what I mean? And most people, as a man once said, most people have their lives neatly arranged around death. You know, you see people, you know, they start talking about retirement, and they start talking about, what do they talk about? Oh, making arrangements for their funeral, and then they start taking more and more pills and more drugs and more this and more that. They expect to deteriorate. They expect to degenerate. They expect to die, and they have their whole life arranged around that. So if somebody comes along and says, we humans were not meant to die, then, you know, they can't accept that because they want to believe in death is what they believe in. See, and death excuses everything. So it becomes eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. That's what it becomes. But some of us, you know, we yearn for something more than that. And we sense deep in our being that that's not the way things are supposed to be. We see the reality of death all around us, and yet at the same time we sense that it's not supposed to be that way. So how was it then that we humans came to fall? Well, it started in the Garden of Eden. If you look at the Garden of Eden story carefully, which is what we're going to do today, you will see that the same thing that happened to Adam and Eve is happening to you. Happening to you, happened to your parents. See, it happens to all of us. Different variations of the theme, but none of us escape the legacy of the Garden of Eden because we are the progeny. We're the offspring. We're the Adam and Eve are our ancestors. And so, as they say, no apple falls far from the tree, and so basically, you men are Adam all over again, and the women are Eves. The only difference, there's a couple of differences. One difference is that Adam had a pure choice. He could choose to obey God's will and believe God and obey God's will, or choose to try to be his own man and do it egotistically, you know, do it on his own. In other words, he could choose he had the choice, the original choice, but you do not have the original choice because you're born with the fallen existence. See, you're born with the fallen, with an animal body, and with born into the life that leads to death, and you're born to fallen parents, failing parents, failing father, and an angry, unloved mother. That's what you're born into. But the good news is that you can, because of what Christ did, he has made it possible for you to transcend death. He has made it possible for you, first your soul and your mind, and then even your body, to return to a state of being, that is very close to God, and that is capable of receiving God's light in such a way, God's love in such a way, that it would be like manna in the desert. You know how the Israelite people were mysteriously fed by this manna that came? And it was the perfect food, the absolute perfect food. All they had to do was eat the manna, and had everything they needed to sustain them. Well, God also has perfect food for us. First, perfect food for your soul, and then also a way for your body to live forever and not even to have to die. This is quite possible. So let's talk about the Garden of Eden, shall we? Let's talk about it. And you will see, when you hear the story of the Garden of Eden, you will recognize. You will recognize how it happened to your parents and how it's happened to you. And when you see in the light of truth, the truth about the Garden of Eden and the truth about the fallen human race, your eyes will be opened. The very truth in which you can see the truth about the fall and about your fall and about the fall of the human race, that very same light is the redeeming light. That when you believe into that light, when you believe into that light, then you're believing into the source of that light, which is your Creator, Now what do you believe in? Well, what do you believe now? Now you're full of doubt. Now you're full of doubt. You doubt God. You doubt. See, no matter how loudly you proclaim this and proclaim that, you still have doubt anyway. And then you drum up emotions, which are substitutes for faith. And you invest a lot of emotion in this and a lot of emotion in that. See, and who do you believe? Why, you believe your experts. You believe the minister puts on a, you know, some guy goes and puts on a, you know, a black shirt with a white, with an odd-looking white collar on it. And he has a cross around his neck or something like that and carries a book, a big black book in his hand, and then you believe what he says. And you go to somebody else and they have on a white coat and a stethoscope and you believe what they say. Then you go sit in a classroom and here comes some person and they get up to the front of the classroom and you have no idea. You have no idea what kind of a person they are. But here they come, a perfect stranger. See, hi, I'm a professor so-and-so, or I'm a teacher so-and-so, and I have a master's in urban ecology or something, and then she or he starts talking, and you believe what they say. See, so you believe everybody and everything. See, you believe the voices that talk to you. Voices come in and talk to you in your mind and say, oh, you know, there's no God and you're no good and everybody hates you and you're ugly and there's no you. So you listen to that, see? Do you believe that? Do you believe that voice of folly? Or do you stand back and look at it, see? What you need to do is to learn to stand back and look at everything. Look at all the people, no matter what kind of an outfit they have on, no matter what kind of a costume they have on. You know, it's like Marcus Welby. Do you remember Marcus Welby? He was an actor, played by Robert. Can't remember his name now, but he was an the fellow that played him was just an actor. See, but people actually believed he was a real doctor, and they sent the actor letters. You know, nowadays they would text him or email him, but back then they sent letters. You know, saying I have this and this symptoms. Can you please tell me what's wrong with me? As if he were a real doctor. Anybody that puts on a white coat, see, anybody that puts on a uniform, well, instantly they seem to have authority over your belief system. Well, could it be possible that believing into all these other people, or even if you don't believe right into what they say, but if they cause you to doubt yourself and doubt what you know in your heart, could it be that this wrong belief in all these people in whom you place your faith and your trust and to whom you give a lot of money, incidentally, could it be that misplaced faith, misplaced trust, misplaced belief, could that be part and parcel of what's wrong with you? See, could that be? We wonder what's wrong with us. Why am I unhappy? Why am I miserable? Why am I confused? Why am I depressed? Why am I anxious? See, why do I have all these symptoms? Why do I have all these chronic things going on? Why is my life a mess? And my relationships a mess, and so on and so forth. All these things are going wrong, and we wonder why. Could it be that you have misplaced allegiance and misplaced belief? See, could it be that that's part of the curse upon the human race from the Garden of Eden? See, the food is cursed. Remember, God cursed the ground, and then he told Adam that he would have to work by the sweat of his brow. Remember that? And remember that Adam lost the authority that he had had? See? Why? Because Adam listened to his wife, and his wife voiced what the serpent had said. So behind what she said was the serpent. It wasn't her fault. She was just simply saying, she was saying what she heard. And she was a perfect temptation, if you will, perfect temptation. See, if something really bizarre and odd comes along to tempt you, or somebody weird or somebody goofy, well, you may not be tempted. You know, they come and they say, give me all your money, and I'll help you. You know, you may not believe it, but then again, you might believe it. How many people come along and say, give me all your money, and then you do, and they promise you something, and then they don't deliver. See, we fall for the lie, don't we? See, that's what happened to Adam. He fell for the lie. And we humans are creatures of the lie. And we inherently fall for the lie. We believe lies more than we believe the truth. If somebody is a good liar, then we believe that good liar. See, we believe that person more than the honest person. The honest person may seem kind of cold and, you know, not believable, but the good liar we believe. So Eve was a very good liar. It wasn't her fault. It wasn't her fault, but she was a good liar. First of all, she was undoubtedly she was pretty, and she was nice, and she was sweet, and she spoke to Adam the words that she had heard. But when she spoke them, Adam liked them. He liked them a lot. She told him that, you know, he could be a big man without God. God said, you know, if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then surely you will die, is what Adam said. But then the serpent came along and cast doubt into Eve and said, did God really say that? Did God really say that you would die? I don't think so. I think he's just... See, the serpent was lying, just making something up. He was tempting Eve. See? And so the serpent said, you know, maybe God's just testing you guys to see whether you're, you know, have the guts to... you know, give it your all and try to be all that you can be. Maybe that's all God's doing, is just testing you. So Eve said that to Adam. Said, hey, why don't we have this apple here, this from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Now, if Adam had loved God and loved Eve, see, if he had really loved Eve, and if he really loved God, he would have said, now, wait just a minute now, Father... You know, I love Father. Father loves us. And I love you even. So now let's just hold off just a minute. Let me check with Father and see what he has to say. That doesn't sound right to me, he would say. But no. He thought about what she said. And he thought, yeah, you know, maybe I can be a big man with knowledge. I can know good and evil. I can have knowledge of good. And I can have knowledge and evil. And then I will be powerful. And I'll be like God. See? All right. So that's what. So he went for it, and he ate the food. It was forbidden food. He ate it, and as soon as he ate it, everything changed. Everything changed. His consciousness changed. See? He began to know fear. He began to know shame. Why? Why was it that they suddenly felt shameful? Before, they had been naked like little children. They ran around, didn't even notice it. And then afterwards, they suddenly became self-conscious and ashamed. See, what? Now, why is that? It's because they changed. The main thing that changed was their relationship with God. See, they were no longer one with Him, no longer in rapport with Him. They broke rapport, see? And now their consciousness, they knew they had done wrong, and they were ashamed, see? So they hid. So then when God came, he said, where are you? And Adam said, here I am. And he said, well, what's going on? Did you eat that forbidden food that I told you not to eat? And Adam said, yeah, but it was that woman. That woman gave it to me. See, he blamed her. He tried to blame her. And then he went to Eve and said, did you give Adam that food that I... from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, I told you not to eat? And she said, well, it was that serpent. It was that serpent that told me. So she made an excuse. See, Adam blamed Eve, so there's blame. There's the first example of blame in the history of the human race. And now everybody goes around blaming and judging everybody else. And then Eve made the excuse. She made the excuse. Said, the serpent made me do it. Instead of admitting to God and say, hey, I was wrong. I listened to that serpent and that was wrong. I knew it was wrong and I told Adam and I shouldn't have done that. Instead, she blamed the serpent. And of course, the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. That's a joke. Zig Ziglar used to tell that joke. He told the story so beautifully about how Adam and Eve fell and then blamed and then made an excuse. And then Zig Ziglar said, and the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. Well, that's exactly right. So here we are today. Now let's look at us. Let's look at your parents and yourself and people around you. And look at how food... First of all, I already said that we believe the lie more than we believe the truth. We believe good liars. A pretty liar, a good liar. Remember Bill Clinton? He was a good liar. How about now? How about your politicians? Don't they lie to you? Don't they promise? Isn't it the same old line? Look, the educators, don't they promise that you'll be great through education? See, they promise you greatness. So the kids go off to college and spend tens of thousands of dollars, see, and acquire a lot of debt. Parents spend their savings and the kids acquire debt, see. And then it's not a good environment there for the most part. It's an unprotected environment. It's an unsafe environment. Things happen. A lot of people are unhappy in their dormitory or something. They're unhappy. And you have all these people in college that are taking drugs and partying and drinking alcohol, see, trying to kill their conscience. You have all these unloved people there, unloved ladies, you know, with food problems, depression problems, see? Yet they continue to believe into the lie that somehow through education, not that there's anything wrong with not knowledge can be good, but first comes understanding. See, first, understanding. First, do what you know is right in your heart. First, believe what you know in your heart. See, which is how God communicates with us, by way of our conscience, wordlessly. We just know things, like little children. They just know. See? So God communicates you by way of your conscience wordlessly. So if you always loved your conscience, always checked with your conscience, always believed your conscience, see, and you live properly moment to moment, one moment at a time, like a symphony plays one note at a time. You live one note at a time, staying very close to your intuition, very close to that inner light, always checking for the rightness of things, see, checking with your conscience for the rightness of things, taking a step at a time, and your life would unfold beautifully according to, well, what the good Lord has in mind for you. But instead, see, you doubt your conscience, you doubt what you know in your heart, you deny it, you ignore it, see, and then when you err, then what do? Then you drink and smoke and eat too much and party too much and text too much and listen to music too much, all these things to help you deny what you know in your heart, what you know, see, your conscience. So we still believe the lie about education, and then how about our politicians? Don't they lie to us? Don't they promise things? They say, hey, you can be this, you can be that, I'll do this for you, give us your more money, more taxes, more this, more that, and you'll be great, see? We'll solve all your problems. And don't we believe in the humanism? Don't we believe we can solve our own problems somehow? We believe we can solve our own problems without God. See how that works? So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the story of the Garden of Eden. Now I wanted to mention food. Remember, I mentioned food. The topic of this lecture is Forbidden Food, The Legacy of Paradise Lost, which incidentally is the title of my new book, which you should get, my brand new book called Forbidden Food. It's over 300 pages. It's all about what we've been talking about here. But how fell, see, and the effects that the fall has had upon us, and about all the issues that we have, and how refinding your Creator, see, how refinding your Creator in that bright consciousness that you once had can help you to solve all your problems. And a lot of us have food issues. Now let's talk about food for just a moment. You see how food was involved in the fall. You see how when Adam ate the forbidden food, he changed. So even today, we the great-great-great-great-grandsons and daughters of Adam and Eve, food is involved in our falls. Have you ever noticed how if a salesman wants to sell you something, he'll buy you a meal first? See? And food, how many people make a mistake? You know, how many young people, you know, they go out, they eat a bunch of food, and then they go out and do something that they shouldn't do. Have premarital sex or something after the food, see. The food weakens our will. Food has an effect upon our consciousness, see. We have an altered consciousness now. An altered consciousness that inherit this altered consciousness is lie oriented. See, instead of to the truth, but to the lie, and instead of the truth, we're oriented towards suggestion. That's why we're all so suggestible. See, so we believe liars. We believe people who are good liars. They become our hypnotists. See, a good liar or a person who puts on a uniform, you know, puts on a minister's garb or a preacher's garb or a rabbi's garb or a priest's garb. See, we believe them. Or they put on the white coat and stethoscope. We believe them. See, they put on some kind of a dress outfit. We believe them. See, or if they put on a silly little outfit and run around on a field chasing balls around, call themselves an athlete, why, we look up to them and we admire them as if they were great, see, as if they were glorious and wonderful. See, so we worship failing, see, get some liar upon some lady that jiggles around on stage, sings some whining song and jiggles around on a stage in a seductive, degrading way. Why, we like that, see? We like that. Why? Because she's made herself, she pretends to make herself lower than us. She's actually higher than us because we're the ones that are giving her money, see? But she pretends to be lower than us, so she makes us feel great. See? The serpent always comes as a friend. He always acts like he's lower, pretends he's lower than you. And then you begin to listen and you begin to believe him or believe her. Start giving them money, giving them your all. See? Giving them power. You give them power over you is what you give them. You give them power over you. And then they rule you. So have you ever wondered why the lowest, you know, the Peter principle definitely does apply where people rise to the level of their competency, but even more so, have you ever wondered why the lowest, the worst people, see, get into positions of power? The worst ones, the most incompetent ones. Because everything is upside down. See, that's the way it was in the Garden of Eden. The lowest of all, the snake, was then in charge of the human race. See, and Adam, who had once had power over all of nature, God had given him that power. All he had to do was listen to God and not do something wrong that God told him not to do, but instead he wanted to be big. He wanted to be like a god. See? So instead he became subject to the woman. See? How about you men today? Aren't you subject to the woman? How many of you men will chase around after a woman and do anything? How many of you men would do anything to get what you want from her? See? For her to support your ego and tell you you're a big man, or to act in a seductive way and act like you're... animal body is so great that she makes you feel like a big man, see? Why, that drives you wild with delight when she makes you feel like a big man. But in truth, she gains the power over you and you become more animal. See? So women and men get married, and the woman, you know, in her heart, she thinks, well, maybe I can whip him into shape, I can improve him, he's got some faults, but, you know, I'll be able to straighten him out. See, or with my support, he'll be great. With my support, he'll be great. You know, they say behind every man stands a woman, but then as one, you know, great psychologist said, but nobody asks who's standing behind her. See, who's guiding her? So the point is, they get married, and then before you know it, she's in charge. Because he gave her the power, because he worships the woman. See, and the authority was transferred from his mother to her. It was transferred from his mother to her because of the failing of his father, who was weak. See, his father was weak, so his mother was unloved. And so the man goes out in the world and hypnotically finds a woman like his mother. He thinks she's the opposite of his mother. Maybe when he marries her, she's real sweet and everything. And later on, he discovers that he's just like her mother. She becomes bossy and so on. But in the meantime, she had hoped that he would be the man, that she would whip him into shape, see, so he could be a man, the noble man that she would like. But the trouble is, when she tried to make him into a noble man, he became less of a man. He became more piggy, more weak, more childish, more of a mama's boy, more animal. See what I mean? And so she begins to hate him. She begins to resent him because she sees herself changing. She sees herself changing from the beautiful, sweet, innocent thing that she wanted to be to becoming naggy and witchy and bitchy. And sees that about herself, and now she's becoming like her mother, who she's tried not to be like. See? And so she resents him for that. She senses that it's his fault, and it is, if he were the man. If he were the man, and he would start to be the man, and look, cry out to his Creator. See, before his knee, before other people, he would be bold and courageous and good and noble, but before his Creator, he would be on his knees. You know, like a picture of George Washington out in the forest. Remember that beautiful picture of George Washington in the forest, in the snow, on his knees? See, that's the way a man is supposed to be. On his knees before Creator, standing tall and noble and brave and wise before everyone else. So now you see how the food, you see the element of hypnosis, how we believe liars, how we fall into suggestion, how we fall into lies. You see how we now inherently doubt what we know in our heart. You see how we're separated from God, and in that separation we begin to die. And so because we have this dying existence, we need to sustain it. I mean, it's all we have, unless we find the, you know, salvation from it, unless we find the secret to the higher life, that we sustain ourselves with food. But the problem is that we misuse food. See, we use food to enhance the hypnosis. See, the very hypnosis by which we fell, we listened to liars and then made mistakes. See, you listen to liars, they say, do this, do that, spend this money, give me more money, do this and do that. Then we do what they say and things go wrong. We're worse off for having listened to them, for having believed them. See, we could kick ourselves the morning after the night before. Why did I believe them? Why did I do that? See, you suspected, didn't you, somewhere along the way? You know, whoever it was, the expert that was treating you, or the person that was telling you what to do, or the one that was saying how great this would be, or how they were going to solve your problems, or whatever. You had a suspected somewhere along the way that there was something wrong with what they were saying. You didn't trust them 100%, or you saw them do some little out-of-character thing or something. It should have been a clue. You should have backed away, but instead, you continued anyway under the hypnosis. Then things went wrong. See? Things went wrong. So what happens is we do the wrong thing. We fall under... we do the wrong thing because of some expert, or because of our peers, or our so-called friends, or the peer group, or the culture, or whatever. So we do wrong things. We make mistakes. We believe the lie about greatness, the lie about glory. And so there we go. But then after we make the mistake, then then reality begins to dawn on us, and then we feel what? Pain, anxiety for having erred and having become worse off. So we make a very foolish mistake. Instead of taking our medicine, see, so to speak, instead of getting up and dusting ourselves off and admitting that we made a mistake by believing a lie, by not having a pure attitude, for not loving God, for not loving truth, for not loving what's right enough to avoid the error, for having listened to other people instead of what we know in our heart. Instead, we want to escape from the truth. We want to save face and save our pride, so then we use food, you know, or drugs, or alcohol, or marijuana, or just food. We use food to again escape into the trance state, into the hypnosis, into the lowered consciousness, so that our pain is taken away, so that reality is gone, so that the truth about our failing, about our lack of character, see, about our dishonesty, about foolishness is taken away. So then we feel a little bit safe there, lost in our trance as we eat. See, we renew the trance state by eating food. See, mother's food, cultural food, junk food. See, and what we can even, people can even misuse health food. They think that health food is going to save them. So they eat their bean sprouts and their and their all their different health things, but without the right attitude. Not that health food is not good, better for us than junk food. It is better for us, but it's not going to save you. Food cannot save you. See, the only thing food can do if you misuse it is lower your consciousness, so that you'll then be in a state in which you'll make more mistakes. See? Well, now what I would like to do is take just a moment here to tell you about my new book. See, the lecture that I've just given is like a little introduction, like an overview. But some of you, especially those of you who have food problems, you know, a lot of people have food problems, you know. Oh, there's all so many different kinds of food problems and substance problems and anorexia and bulimia and so on. A lot of people. And people are always dieting, and people are always having issues around food, and health issues around food, and, you know, not to mention drugs and meds and side effects and marijuana and alcohol, and, you know, these are, you know, alcohol and drugs and so on, those are variations of food. Those are food things that we put in our mouth, substances we put in our mouth, see? So why is it that, you see, you don't see animals, you know, becoming alcoholics or marijuana potheads or something like that. An animal is happy, you know, a cat or a dog or something, they're happy in reality. They're happy in reality. But we humans, what is it that we want? We want some kind of a high. We want two things. Number one, we want a high, see, to feel like God. That's the thing we want. See, if you get a high from a drug, or you get a self-righteous high when you puff up in judgment of someone, when you puff up in judgment over what somebody did, see, or you become angry and filled with rage, then you have a high. For just a moment, you feel like a god, see, an ignominious god, however, a vengeful, hateful, and you're not really God, but you, for a moment, you feel like God, see? And then you want to exact judgment upon people. You become, in your mind, you become their the judge and jury and executioner of people who somehow dissed you. See, you're hateful toward them. See, you're a hateful God. But we want to have a high, so we take drugs to have a high, to feel great and glorious. What's with this methamphetamine and cocaine and all these drugs? People get a high. But then what happens? Then after the high comes a low. And every time the low is lower. See, people think they're going to heaven, but they're actually going to hell. They think they're rising, but they're actually falling. They think they're better, but they're actually worse. So we want a high from our drugs. But then later, when we don't want a high, what do we want? We want escape. Escape from what? From God, from reality, from truth, from having our ego humiliated and having to admit the truth about our weakness and our wrong and our failings. So we want an escape. So then we use our drugs and our meds and our food for escape. So when you see people watching a football game on TV, sitting there munching away on hot wings or, you know, pizza or some kind of corn chips or something like that, you see them lost in a trance, away from reality, away from the pain and shame of the truth. But see, some of us, we can't live that way. We live that way for a while. You know, when we're kids, we see our parents, you know, messing up, and we become angry at our parents, and we resent them, and then we go off to the world, and, you know, we get caught up in our peer group, and then we make mistakes. We're looking for freedom, see? We resent our parents, but then we want to be ourselves. We want to be ourselves. And we want freedom, but we don't find true freedom and true creativity, because our freedom that we seek is out of rebellion, out of resentment, and out of hatred. So we get tattoos, or we pierce ourselves, or we, you know, take drugs, or we rush off with some boy that our parents would have disapproved of, or, see, we go off, and we think we find freedom that way, but all we find is more enslavement, see, not true freedom. And we become less and less of ourselves, see? And we just become more and more lost and worldly and confused and so on. So a lot of us go, that's the way we go. But then later we begin to cry out for answers. We want to find our true self again. We want to find our true self. See, and we're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and we're ready to give up hate. We're willing to give up hate. Maybe we don't know how. If you get my meditation, it will help you. If you get my meditation in books, they'll show you how. To give up hate and resentment. See, give up the baggage of the past and move forward. See, that's what you need. But along the way, you develop all kinds of issues, and health problems and mental health problems and substance problems and everything else, as I've already mentioned. So you need to get my book, Forbidden Food, The Legacy of Paradise Lost and The Hope of Redemption. That's the name of the book, Forbidden Food, The Legacy of Paradise Lost and The Promise of Redemption. It's a beautiful book. It's about what I've been talking about here. But of course, I also talk about some health issues from a spiritual point of view. You know, I talk about cancer and chronic illnesses from a spiritual point perspective. You know, why do we become subject to these dreadful diseases in the first place? You know, what is it about our human that we have fallen to be subject to these things? See, just like I've been talking about in this lecture, the fall of the human race from paradise, see, to jungle hell that we now live in, where we're subject to all these awful things. So the book is very good. I talk about parents and kids and about forgiveness and about love. And I talk about meditation and how meditation helps us through a proper meditation. See, some meditations are just more analgesics. Just like we eat to forget, we drink to forget, we smoke to forget. See, some people meditate to forget. They want to feel like God. See, like Shirley MacLaine, you know, proclaimed that she was God or something like that. Well, that's what's behind so many of these esoteric practices. Bottom line is they won't admit it because it would be too shameful. And the person who's seeking it doesn't want to admit it either. But truth is, they want to feel like God or be God. But that's not going to work. So more visualizations, more external authority, more trance induction, and all these things, that's not what you need. It's more of the same. You don't need more of the same. You need something different. You need to wake up. My meditation will help you to wake up. And my books will help you wake up too. But you need to get the book. It's very, very good. You can find it at commonsensecounseling.org or talktoapastor.org. Talktoapastor.org. And just look for it. You'll find it. It'll be somewhere. It'll be in the right sidebar, or it'll be somewhere. You'll find it. Forbidden Food. And you can get it. You can get it in paperback from Amazon, or you can get it in ebook form. Or you can order it for me. Send a little donation, and I'll send it to you as a gift. Yeah, send me a little donation. I'll send you it as a gift by email, as a PDF attachment. You'll love it. If you like this lecture or you recognize the truth in it and you're looking for truthful answers, then you'll just love the book. It's a good read. It'll be a lot of fun. You'll learn something and you'll get better. Thanks for listening to this lecture. My name is Roland. Until next time, bye-bye.